Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
What's happening right now is tech firms are doing more and more of the last mile that banks used to do through branches and whatnot, and we're here to service that. So we have a API platform that allows banks and I'll call them fintechs, tech firms, to talk to each other.
That was Chris Dean, the co-founder and CEO of Treasury Prime, and he's my special guest on this episode of the Leaders in Payments podcast. And I'm your host, Greg Myers. Treasury Prime is a banking as a service operating system that provides modern banking software so that fintechs or corporate clients can directly connect to the underlying infrastructure of banks through its APIs. And banks can distribute their products through fintechs or embed them in apps and other new channels. Chris and I discuss what makes Treasury Prime unique in the marketplace, where the industry is heading, the importance of focusing on banks, and making sure that the banking system is safe and secure. We've got a great episode ahead, so let's get started. Hi, Chris. Thank you for being here, and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
My pleasure. Great to be here, Greg.
So let's go ahead and dive in. If you don't mind, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that. We'll circle back to your professional journey in a few minutes.
Sure. I live here in San Francisco, where I am right now. And I grew up in San Diego, which is a very different place. The weather's always great every day in San Diego. I grew up in the world's smallest house on the ocean, and I miss it all the time. I'm a deeply tenured nerd, right? I've been like this my whole life. I went to Caltech in Pasadena because that's in California, not in some cold place. And I studied physics there, and I was a machine learning researcher for a while. And then at some point, my wife said, she had to move back home to San Francisco, take care of the folks. And so we moved that here. And that was many, many years ago.
Well, let's talk about Treasury Prime. So tell us what Treasury Prime does.
Sure. Treasury Prime, we're on a mission, like a lot of startups. And our mission is to remake how the U.S. banking system works. If we look at how banking is going, the U.S. has a great, albeit very complicated banking system, but what's happening right now is tech firms are doing more and more of the last mile that banks used to do through branches and whatnot, and we're here to service that. So we have a API platform that allows banks, and I'll call them fintechs, tech firms, to talk to each other in a safe and sound way, and I've been doing that for quite a while now across three different companies.
So when you say banks, obviously there are banks, credit unions, community banks, banks of many sizes. So is it a segment of banks or is it really any bank?
Well, I like to say it's any bank. In practice, it's more on the commercially chartered community banks. That's like a typical bank for us is like 2-3 billion in deposits, that kind of number. We do have banks with hundreds of billions in deposits and assets. I do not think I'll ever get a money center on the platform. It's just too hard. So none of the B of A, Citi, JP Morgan guys. I'm happy to work with any credit union. It just never comes up.
And your APIs are just put on top of a banking platform? Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah. So our technology is actually, it's a pretty big moat for us compared to other folks who do this. We go into a bank and we connect directly to all the existing bank systems. Connect to one of the bank cores for a little bank. They'll have one core. We'll connect directly to that so we can do reconciliation and settlement in real time. We'll connect to all their different payment gateways. We'll sometimes connect to their card systems. Usually their card systems aren't really at the level of functionality that, you know, a tech firm will need, so we'll bring in our own. But we connect directly with everything, and that's kind of how we do it. I worked at a SVB for a hot minute, and I learned all the ways that you can mess up here. So we are very careful about building our system so that it's harder to mess up.
And are you selling directly or do you go through partnership channels or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Our main client's the bank, right? We go to a bank and we have two basic kind of customers. The first banking customer is they're new to the space. They're a regional in some small region somewhere. You know, they're maybe a $5 billion bank. They're seeing their deposits dry up as the nationals and super regionals move in. And they're looking for alternate partners, and deposits is a new channel of business. And so we'll teach them how to do that. And they buy our software, and that enables them to run that program. And the other folks are people who have been doing this a little while, but they've been doing it by themselves, slinging flat files around, doing things like that. And pretty quickly, they realize that's untenable. They need an actual software product. And so they'll do that for us. There's tech firms also that we have, like fintechs, who we talk to, big ones and small ones. But what we try to do is make sure the bank is leading all those relationships.
Is that sort of the way they want it, to be the lead as opposed to the fintech?
They do. I mean, if you look at the, especially now, like this has changed maybe in the last couple of years, maybe you've been able to get away with almost disintermediating the bank for a while now. Like if you're an intermediary, we've never really acted like this, but we could, or we could have in the past, where we sit between a bank and a fintech and we pretend to be the bank and answer all the, like, here's how you do compliance, here's how you do KYC, here's how you handle fraud, all that stuff. But nowadays, the U.S. regulators have very clearly said, please don't do that. And all the folks who are doing that in the banking world are in trouble. And none of our banks are in trouble because none of them do that. And that's why we do it the way we do it, because we're trying to transform how U.S. banking works. And the only way to do that is to get the regulatory bodies on your side.
The banks are your end customer. You're connecting the fintechs. And you mentioned deposits. Is that where you feel you kind of play, is to help the banks in that part of their business?
It's a lot of it for sure. I mean, most of the banks, what they're doing is they're buying deposits, right? It turns out that tech firms, especially like the prototypical Silicon Valley venture-backed startup, which is a lot of these tech firms, they are really, really good at building products, and they're really, really good at marketing to their segment. And banks are good at banking, which is a different problem. So they've existed for, you know, hundreds of years, decades at least, by having branches and having a relationship with the people in their town or in their region. And as we become more nationalized, that's shrinking. But this is a way they can have a significant channel. Like, we don't have anyone on our platform with more than 50% of the deposits from us, more like 20%, but it is a significant source. And it is far cheaper to do it this way, and, you know, as an ROI, than it is to, I'm going to build another branch in the town next door.
Absolutely. So do you sell this via just a SaaS model, or is there consulting fees or implementation fees? Can you explain kind of the pricing side?
Sure. The basic thing is a SaaS model where we'll get paid a monthly fee, and then there's usage on top of that, you know, which is similar but different to how like a core provider would do it. Like, the more you use our stuff, the more you pay, and we have a fee that we charge per tech firm for fintech that the bank is partnering with. Often there are professional services that come with that. Sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't, but it's common. Like for, let's say a bank brings on a new fintech with our help, and usually we help a lot during this process, and they sign up the fintech, and then the fintech needs to be implemented. Mostly these banks don't have the staff to do that. So they outsource that to us. We help with the implementation. I have a whole team that's dedicated just to doing this one part, the professional services problem. That works great. The tech firm's happy. The bank's happy. We're happy. And then that means that the tech firm can get up very quickly. And in the industry, we're by far the fastest ones to get someone from our banks, and us together are by far the fastest to get someone from they sign the contract to their production.
That's a good segue into the next question. What would you say differentiates you from your competitors?
Oh, there's so much. Oh my gosh. Most of our competitors, I don't think they understand how banking works. It's just, it's very confusing to even talk with them. But the banking system is complicated, especially in the US. Like if you count the credit unions, like you're talking about, there's somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 financial institutions. It's just a lot. And there's multiple regulatory agencies. It is hard to navigate. It's confusing. But one thing is that everybody has in common is that they really want the entire money system and the economy to be safe and sound. And this is a serious thing. And if you mess with that, everyone will have a bad day. The regulators come down on you. Banks will get shut down. People will lose their jobs. fintechs will get shut down, and this is all very real. So how do we differ? We prevent all of that. What we do is we have a great relationship with the banks. We have a great relationship with the regulatory bodies. The fintechs come to us, are very safe. Our tech is the best in the industry. And that's how we're really different. This is all very high level. At a very practical level, our competitors treat the banks as a supplier, as a vendor that doesn't matter. And for us, our banks are the main thing to get right. Because if you don't get that right, no tech firm will do business with you. There's a technical moat we have also, which is we do these direct integrations to the core system, which other folks don't do. And that means they're always like they're doing settlements every week or every day or something. And that just seems ridiculous to me.
Well, where do you see the industry heading? Obviously, you can answer that in terms of the banking side as related to what you do. But where do you see it headed, say, maybe in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, we're in this middle of this giant shakeout. I'm often put in this category called banking as a service, right? Where there's, and to me, that's fine. That's a good name, but it's not what everyone else thinks it means anymore. To me, that means there's technology which allows you to access a bank through some tech, through an API. That's cool. There's a lot of folks who do this. We are seeing what's happening right now in that world is like one of these BaaS firms, one after another, is going out of business. One after another is running out of money. They're losing all their clients. And how do I know this? Because I see them all coming to us, like in a mad rush, all their clients coming to us looking for a new home. And I think that's going to shake out over the next couple of years. And my guess is that of the existing players, there's only going to be one or two that are around 3 to 5 years from now.
Do you think that's just a nature of kind of the normal business curve of a lot of companies see an opportunity, raise money, and then there's always the one or two winners at the end?
I think it's more that, I mean, it's not wrong, but I do think it's more that you had people come to this problem and looked at it like, oh, this is like Amazon Web Services, or this is like Twilio, where there is some just generic supplier out there who can do whatever I want. And I'm just going to put a very nice API on top of them, and I'm going to get all the customers. And that is not how it works. That is not what banking's like. And you have to make sure that the banks are in charge here, because banking's complicated. And if you mess it up, it's not like you're going to get your hand slapped. Your business will get shut down. You know, we've seen this over and over again in the past year or so. All these different banks have all these different problems. And why is that? A lot of them, it's because of the fintechs they're working with, and they're not providing the proper oversight. That's the reason. It's like, basically, the chickens are coming home to roost. The regulators might be slow because they have a lot to do, but they are for sure going to protect the banking system, and that's what's happening right now.
Do you see more regulatory and compliance constraints coming, or are we sort of at that point where we're already there?
No, we're still happening. I expect 3-4 more consent orders in the next couple months. And I expect more guidance from different regulators, the OCC, which is one of the regulators especially. I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon. I mean, for me, I'm happy about this because this is the world we're designed to live in, but it certainly makes it chaotic.
Well, I mean, if it's one of your differentiators and your value props, then it sounds like you're positioned in a very good place.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing that we start with is that we had this other company called Standard Treasury, which is different than Treasury Prime. And that was selling a similar but different product to like the money centers, maybe the top, every bank above 100 billion in deposits. Our first client was Silicon Valley Bank, and they ended up buying the whole company. And so I ran a fintech group there at SVB for a while. And I saw everything good and bad that could happen just because that lens of being inside the bank and dealing with these big banks with these very complicated problems. And our conclusion, my co-founder Jim and I, was, oh, this is actually really simple. The banks win. The banks always win. The banks win on economics. The banks win on who sticks around. And if you position your company from that perspective, you'll be fine. If you pretend the banks don't matter, you are going to get slapped around. So don't do that.
Makes a lot of sense. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. You mentioned a little bit about your career there, but if you don't mind, walk us through your professional journey up into your role there as the co-founder and CEO.
I went to school and thought, you know, my ultimate goal would be to become a physics professor at some mid-tier school. That was like what I thought I'd be happiest with. I was in the middle of doing some research in machine learning. It was computational physics, but still machine learning. And I did all these really cool, fun problems. And I liked that. The cool, fun problems were great. I solved the biggest machine learning problem for like a hot minute back in the day. This is like 25 years ago or something, a million years ago. And I liked that. And then I had to move for personal reasons. I said, okay, before I start grad school, I'll work for a year, save some money in San Francisco. And I found out something amazing. The job I got was a startup. I did not know what that word meant. And I loved it. Once I was in the door, I'm like, I'm never stopping this. This is what I like. I like the direct feedback. I like building the problem. I like figuring out what people actually need and building that. And I've done startup after startup since then. The first one was a train wreck and they had no idea what they were doing. And it was like an episode of like a TV show or a movie where it shows like everything wrong with Silicon Valley. It was fantastic. There was drug use. There was yelling matches, screaming fits, guards at the door to prevent the wrong person from coming in. It was fantastic. It sounds great, right? And it's funny, like I loved it. I didn't like the drama, but I loved everything else. And so I got another job at this company that was doing basically the opposite. The first one was bleeding edge tech. And this one was very understandable. And I did that. I kind of learned what a startup was. And since then I've been founding and running my own. I'm usually the technical guy here. Turns out that this problem is highly technical. So I feel very comfortable here in Treasury Prime. And that's where I've been. I was accidentally introduced to banking because my friend needed some help. And I was like semi-retired at that point. And I started to go, oh, wait, where's banking been all my life? I love banking. Tell me more. And you know, I've been doing that ever since.
And so you have a co-founder. So are you the technical guy and he's the operations guy? Or how is that sort of split up?
No, it's terrible. We're both uber technical nerds. Like we're both like these great programmers who can write enormous amounts of code. And that is not something that either of us do a lot anymore. And I'm like, well, it would be better maybe if I was the most amazing marketing person of all time. But sadly, I am not, right? I'm just some pretty good programmer.
Okay, great. Well, what are some things you're passionate about? So maybe one work-related passion and one personal passion.
Yeah, I mean, the passion about work is, I love the problem I'm working on. It's probably pretty clear. I love that. But I love the aspect of kind of the meta stuff about a startup. At some point, it changes from you're building the product to you're building the company to build the product. And I really enjoy that. I think that there's different ways to do it. And you can try all the sorts of processes or approaches. And for me, it comes down to something pretty simple, is that the thing that makes great startups work are just basically two things. One, you got to choose the right problem. So if you know if it's not growing or not doing anything, it's the wrong problem. And you have to have just truly amazing, great people because things change every day. It's a lot of work. Can be a lot of emotions when things don't work out well. And you have to have just the best possible people to work together. And that really excites me, like finding the best people and getting to work with them. I very much enjoy that. That's part of was the lure of academia for me. And like this checks all those boxes. What was the other one on a personal note?
Yeah, personal side.
Well, you know, I'm a pretty happy, boring person. I'm married, got a kid and a dog. So I am a amateur beekeeper. I have four hives that I keep. And, you know, it's not quite time, but almost time for, you know, the next season to start. And I love that. Bees are like little versions of like me. They just like making stuff all day long. You know, they're building their comb. They're going out there. They're doing the work. Honey comes out at the end. Great.
So I've done 305 episodes. You're my first beekeeper.
That's good.
So, I mean, I have to ask some follow-on questions real quick about that. So,
sure. Hit me.
I mean, obviously you have a passion for it. It's really cool. I mean, I'm scared to death of bees, but that's okay. So what's the end product? Do you sell the honey or what do you do?
No, I usually give it away to people. You know, it's the Christmas gift, you know, and the neighbors exchange stuff. Like, my neighbor and I trade. She makes marmalade and I make honey. We trade it with each other. I have a decent amount of honey, you know, every season, but it always seems to disappear. Like people are always like, oh, can I have some? Because it's honey and like it's people like honey.
Seems like that'd be a good employee gift.
It is. I don't have enough honey for that, though. It's like, because that's a lot of jars of honey. And we're a remote company. So we have people in like Miami and New Hampshire and Hawaii. And I'm like, I'm terrified of shipping a bottle of honey, glass bottle, all that way. It's going to break. It's going to be a mess.
Gotcha. So one final question on the bees. So do you have a lot of land? I mean, you can't just like be living in a real small house with a tiny backyard and have four hives, right?
I'm fortunate to have more land than you would think for where I live, but you can actually. My buddies who have it on top of their apartment building, their hives, bees can go like 3 miles. So you're in San Francisco, there's greenery all around, and like there's big parks that the bees go to. They'll go long distances and then come back to their home. It does work. The only surprising thing about doing it on your apartment roof is honey is heavy. And so you'll have to like make sure you reinforce the roof, because about, was it 4 years ago, I had someone at our bee club who their roof caved in because the honey got too heavy.
Wow, never would have thought of that.
Yeah, me either.
Great. Well, one final question. I think you'll have a neat perspective because of your startup kind of passion around that. But I always ask this because I think everyone kind of brings their own unique answer to it. If someone comes to you and they say, hey, Chris, I'm interested in payments, fintech, banking, kind of the financial services space, and they want to build a career in this space. Maybe they even want a job with your company. And they say, hey, what do I need to do to be successful in this industry? What would you tell them?
There's different kinds of problems. A lot of the people I know who ask me this come from the AI machine learning world, and they built search engines and things like that. I've done that too. And the main difference here is that people really care about their money. They care about every penny. And so you have to get it right. And a lot of the things that other product spaces do, it's more probabilistic. You just have to get mostly right. You don't have to get it exactly right. And the example is always, I go to Google, I search for the thing. If the top two answers are good, I'm good. They don't have to be in a particular order, just as long as the top two or three are about right. That's not true with money. You know, you said, hey, I bought a house and I'm going to send whatever it is. You know, I'm sending $1 million to buy the house and I only send 900,000. You're going to be pretty mad, right? And like, you can't get the payment wrong. You just can't. That is the main thing, to like change your attitude so that like it's always done correctly. The people who don't do that, like, and I have competitors who don't do that, I'm shocked at that, because you're going to get in trouble sooner or later, and they do.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Chris, we've covered obviously a lot of ground about you and the company and the industry. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up the show?
I like to say, as I've been saying for a while here, that I said this earlier, if you're working in this area and you're doing something, whether you're a bank or a tech company or you're a person who just can get into it, realize that in the U.S., banks win. We have a lot of banks. We're not going to create a lot more banks. Probably the number will shrink. So whatever you do, make sure that you treat the bank the right way. If you do that, you can get everything else to work. You can do all the rest. But if you ignore that hard part, it's impossible to get anything working.
Well, I think that's a great way to summarize the show and wrap up. So Chris, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know your time is very valuable, so I really appreciate you being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.